Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Georgia fans always love following recruiting and are always going to be excited about incoming freshmen in any given year. That may be especially true here in 2017 because of just how good Georgia's 2017 class appears to be on paper and just how much Georgia needs contributions from those guys this season. So with that in mind, I thought I'd start the show today by making a few predictions about what I think might happen for some of these freshmen here this season. I really want to focus in on three names in particular. Let me start with wide receiver J.J. Holloman, if you don't mind, because I thought, if you want to go back to G-Day, I thought that Holloman was the most fun storyline for me of G-Day. That includes even getting a chance to see Jake Fromm on the field for the first time. There was something about what Holloman brought to the table that was just kind of refreshing to see in terms of his athleticism, his ability to go up and get the football as a wide receiver, and it became really easy to kind of look into the fall and say, boy, what could a guy like that do against SEC competition? Well, I wasn't apparently the only one impressed. Kirby Smart also liked Holloman's performance back during the spring game.
You know, J.J.'s had an up-and-down spring. He's been consistent in his effort and his toughness, but he's had some battles, sometimes catching it, and I thought today he did a great job. What a great kid. For him to get rewarded with a good day is really good because he worked all spring. Tyler Simmons is another guy. He goes out and works his tail off all spring, and they got a little rapport going with Fromm because they've worked with him so much during the spring from timing and things like that. So I thought that those wideouts caught the ball well. It was exciting to see some balls down the field. That's why you get 66,000 people here. You know, they want to see the ball thrown. They want to see the ball caught. They want to see points scored. So we wanted to give it to them.
Fans want to see points scored, that's for sure. I'll get back to that point in a moment. I actually want to deal with something else that Kirby Smart said there, though. Did you hear him say that it was good that J.J. Holloman had a good day? Well, why in particular is it good for Georgia and good for Holloman that he had a good day? Why do you want to see more of what Holloman does be rewarded? Well, as a little bit of a backstory on that, let's go back a couple weeks before the G-Day spring game when Kirby went into a little more detail about exactly what it is that he likes about what Jeremiah, or as we now call him, J.J. Holloman, what J.J. Holloman has done for Georgia, did for himself back during the spring.
I think the biggest thing he brings is a toughness factor. You know, one of the traits that stuck out on his tape, everybody talks about the catches and the size, but he's physical, and that's the demeanor that we need. A guy out there that's not afraid to go hit you and hatch you up, I really like that about the guy. I think he's going to help us on special teams. You know, he'll have a learning curve to go through to learn the sets and the different plays, but I'm excited about his work habits. He's one of the hardest working kids out there, those mid-year guys, because he doesn't really care what other people think. He doesn't look around at the other guys. He's focused on, I'm going to give you all the effort I can.
So that's a pretty good description there of why it was that Kirby was happy to see J.J. have a good spring game. I think Georgia fans would agree with that. But the other thing that Georgia fans will also agree with is Kirby Smart's assessment of Georgia fans. They show up, they want to see points scored, they want to see the ball going down the field. That's true during G-Day, and frankly, I think a lot of Georgia fans like to see a little bit more of that during the regular season as well. Well, my prediction for J.J. Holloman is that he's going to contribute some to that this year. I've got Holloman 4 touchdowns, 300 yards receiving this year. Does that sound about right to y'all? Does that sound like an okay prediction for Holloman this year? 4 touchdowns, 300 yards. Here's the reason why I get to that number for him. It's really twofold. I think Holloman's a pretty good prospect. I also think the Georgia offense is hopefully, likely, maybe it's hopefully or likely, maybe it's a little bit of both, but hopefully likely to just do a little better this season. You know, have a few more plays out on the field. Spread the wealth around a little bit more with receiving yards, touchdowns, and various things like that. So if that be the case, there's going to be more yards and touchdowns to go around. So maybe J.J. Holloman's one of the guys that can contribute some to that. As I said, I've got him 4 touchdowns, 300 yards this season. We'll see if that plays itself out. Another freshman I want to talk about for a moment is D'Angelo Gibbs. Other side of the ball on defense, I've got a couple predictions when it comes to D'Angelo Gibbs. But as a setup for D'Angelo, let me go back to Kirby here for a moment, because the role in which Kirby's kind of in for this, or I should say the role that D'Angelo is kind of in during the spring, and I think this will be the same role that he kind of fills for Georgia during the fall, is a guy competing for playing time there at the star position, the extra defensive back. But in college football, the way that it is now, there's no such thing as extra defensive back. 5 defensive backs has essentially become a base defense. And when Georgia's showing that look, Gibbs, I think, has a really good chance to be on the field. And Kirby Smart, back during the spring, did a really interesting job of kind of going into detail and explaining his thought process for what you do with that star position, what you do for D'Angelo Gibbs, and with D'Angelo Gibbs in particular. I think this quote from Kirby is a really interesting setup to the D'Angelo Gibbs conversation. Take a listen.
I think that's a really important spot in your defense because it's like an anchor. You know, Mo was just kind of like steady. He didn't play much anywhere else because he just played there. So we're trying to develop and figure out who those people are. The way we're practicing, you know, Tyreek is really our star, but he's on a split field when we split him up. So he practices at corner and he practices at star. So he's taking reps at both places because if we lost a corner right now, Tyreek might be the first corner in the game. But he is our star if we play today. Now, D'Angelo and Richard LeCount, especially D'Angelo, has a body more like Mo. I mean, you're out there playing on Charlie Warner, and he comes to block you. You know, do you want a 160-pound guy or do you want a 205-pound guy? It's pretty obvious that we got to have a big guy. So D'Angelo is a guy that we know has the ability. Can he sustain? Can he learn? Can he do all the things he's got to do? There's an argument to say that guy takes every rep at that position, and that becomes his home base, and he becomes like Mo. But we're not ready to commit all that to him because we think he's a good football player that might be able to play other positions. So the battle continues. Tyreek, Richard LeCount, D'Angelo Gibbs, and we think in those scrimmages it'll reveal itself who the guy is.
The Mo that Kirby references there is obviously Maurice Smith, the leader of last year's defense. The Tyreek that he references is obviously Tyreek McGee, who you know. And I think what Kirby Smart talks about there is really interesting. And Is D'Angelo best suited to play a regular safety position? Is he best suited to play the star position? I don't know. That'll work itself out over time. Ultimately, if star is what's available to him here in 2017, I think he wins that starting job, I think, or to the extent that it's a starting job. I think he wins that job. I think he's on the field a lot for Georgia this season. So much so that I think that D'Angelo Gibbs is easily going to be a first-team All-SEC freshman type guy. On the All-Freshman team for the SEC, I think D'Angelo Gibbs easily earns a spot on that. And then by sophomore year, by 2018, I think D'Angelo Gibbs is a first-team All-SEC selection as a defensive back. I think that's the kind of talent that Georgia's working with here. I think that's the kind of impact that he's going to make on the Georgia team. Because lest we forget, you know, Georgia won a big-time head-to-head battle with Alabama for Gibbs. There aren't a lot of examples of that recently. Georgia had a couple of them in 2017, at least a couple, of going head-to-head with Alabama and beating out Alabama for the player. Gibbs is a prominent example of that. I think it's arguably Georgia's most significant 2017 win. It's certainly a very near the top of its top 2017 recruiting wins. And I think Gibbs as a player is going to prove just how much it mattered when he did choose Georgia over Alabama. All freshman guy in 2017, yeah, that's what I think. By 2018, one of the very best defensive backs in the SEC and probably a household name. Third freshman I want to mention here for a moment, and that's Isaiah Wilson. Now, the situation with Georgia's offensive line in terms of the freshmen has kind of been well documented by now. I think most of us view three freshmen as probably competing for playing time. Natori Johnson, Andrew Thomas, and Isaiah Wilson. Now, the Natori Johnson stuff, that'll work itself out. I know that y'all know what I'm talking about. We'll figure out where all that's going here in a little while. But how about side by side, Andrew Thomas, Isaiah Wilson? A lot of people have weighed in. Which of these two incoming freshmen as the tackle is ultimately in the best position to play? Well, they may both eventually be in a position to play early, but when you think about the true hallmark of what Kirby was looking for, the change he wanted to make, visually, you could look at him and notice, to the Georgia offensive line and the Georgia program, it's about that size on the offensive line. As a matter of fact, back on National Signing Day, Kirby Smart couldn't stop himself from saying, yeah, I really like the stature these guys bring to the table.
I think it's exciting anytime you get a group like that. I certainly very impressed with the stature of those guys. They've got to do a good job of controlling that between now and arrival here, because you know only one of them's here right now. So those guys can't get too big. They've got to do a good job of being in shape. They've got to learn quickly. We got to do a good job developing those guys.
Yeah, listen, you know, Kirby being a coach is always going to have something to worry about. Big guys getting too big, needing to stay in shape. Yeah, I'm sure that's probably a little bit of a concern. But more important than there, Kirby wanted the big offensive linemen, and he got them. And for Georgia, the really big offensive line represented by guys like Isaiah Wilson, that's a bit of a difference for the program. Chip Towers has told us that.
A lot of times in the past, Georgia's Georgia has brought linemen in and needed to beef them up a little bit. You know, they come in with kind of tight end frames, and you need to turn them into tackles. And in these cases, you've got nose guards you're trying to turn into tackles, if you will.
Yeah, listen, different in this case is embodied by Isaiah Wilson more than any of the other freshmen coming in this year. He's the guy that really cast that gigantic shadow. And as good as Andrew Thomas probably will be, and as good as many of these other guys hopefully will also be, I think Isaiah Wilson was the five-star prospect for a reason. And so if a freshman does emerge as a starter, I think it will. And I think it's going to be Isaiah Wilson. As a matter of fact, that's my prediction for Georgia this season, that Wilson is a full-season starter, and I think it's going to be at the right tackle position. So those are my predictions. Three interesting looks at what might happen for Georgia this year. Freshman heralded a part of that 2017 class, one of the most exciting 20 recruiting classes Georgia's brought in some time. And the three guys that I just mentioned, when they get a chance to play in 2017, I think they may show that a lot of the hype about this class back in February actually proves to be warranted. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Thanks so much for being with us, either on radio, podcast, no video this week. We'll be back again on Facebook Live on Monday. But for this week, it's radio on 960 The Ref at noon. Podcast form anytime, anywhere, iTunes, SoundCloud, DogNation.com, the whole nine yards for that. Just thanks so much for listening to Dog Nation Daily. And by the way, check out DogNation.com if you haven't already. Get signed up for our R.S. Andrews Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend. It's all there for you. Your spot on the Dog Nation Invasion bus, chance to win tickets, airfare, lodging. It's going to be a great trip, and you've got a chance to win. This is your final chance to win. It's courtesy of R.S. Andrews, so if you have not gotten signed up for that, get there. Do that at DogNation.com. We're actually going to announce the winner of this on Dog Nation Daily coming up very soon. Of course, when you think about R.S. Andrews, remember they want you to keep cool this summer no matter how hot it gets with their guaranteed $99 AC tune-up. Don't let your air conditioning go out on the hottest day of the summer. Your whole family's going to be in a bad mood when that happens. You got to get the guaranteed R.S. Andrews $99 air conditioning tune-up to prevent that from happening. Their clean, screen, trained, and timely techs will give your system a thorough check and guarantee it all summer. So please do not let it slide. Call the ones I trust. R.S. Andrews. You can find them online at rsandrews.com. Let me also do the math here. By the way, I'm on vacation this week, so all these shows are pre-recorded, so I have to kind of figure out the math here on the Gator Hater Countdown. But the best we can tell, 129 days from the time you're listening to this show, Georgia, Florida, that's our Gator Hater Countdown, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Go to shopdognation.com, get yourself a Gator Hater t-shirt. You can help us count down until Georgia, Florida, a series that we believe is going to change this year, a win that Georgia's going to get and maybe reestablish itself at the top of the SEC East, and certainly change the conversation around the Georgia-Florida rivalry. We're going to have Coach Jim Donnan back here on the show in just a moment. Really fun part one of that conversation with him last week. A really good part two here coming up in just a moment. I think you're going to really like that. Before we get to that, I wanted to talk a little more about some Georgia newcomers. You know, I just talked about incoming freshmen, some predictions for at least three of those freshmen, what I think they might be able to do this season. But it did occur to me, and I was sitting on the porch drinking some coffee on Saturday. I was jotting down a few notes. It occurred to me that there are a few guys a part of Georgia's 2017 team that are not freshmen, but could have pretty significant impacts, and I don't think we're talking enough about them. They are newcomers that we're not paying attention to right now, but by the time the season gets here, we could be noticing these guys a lot. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Now I'm going to butcher this name. Cameron Nizalak, or Nizalak, is that the punter? Nizalak is what we're going with. Nizalak, however you say it, the young man that transfers over from Columbia. This is a guy that I think has a pretty legitimate shot to emerge as Georgia's punter this season. That's not a guy we're talking about much right now, but he could be the guy at punter for Georgia, especially if Bryce Ramsey focuses in on quarterback. That's a newcomer whose name we'll be paying a lot more attention to in the fall than we probably are right now. Another specialist for whom that's probably true is David Marvin, another transfer who comes to Georgia. 17 of 23 on his field goals a year ago, hit 2 from 57 yards. That's significant for a Georgia team that didn't have any 50-plus yard field goals a year ago. Marvin is on scholarship. You don't give out a scholarship unless you plan on giving to a player who's capable of using it. I think Marvin, with all due respect to Rodrigo Blankenship, that's going to be an interesting side-by-side battle. I think Marvin could emerge as UGA's place kicker. That's another example of a newcomer to the Georgia program we're not talking about now, but we could be talking about a lot in the fall. And it's not just specialists here as well. How about J.R. Reed, the cousin of D'Angelo Gibbs, in the mix for Georgia defensive back? Thought what Seth Emerson said about him was really interesting, that he's a guy who was maybe thought to be just coming in to help entice D'Angelo Gibbs. But as Seth Emerson recently wrote at DogNation.com, Reed spent the spring showing he's very good in his own right and could be very well in the mix for a starting position there at safety. That's another guy we could be talking about there for Georgia this fall, a newcomer to the program. I'd also add DeMarcus Hayes, the junior college offensive lineman, in that discussion as well. So when you think about new players at Georgia, it's not just freshmen. Some of those guys I just mentioned could be in the mix too. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily. Hope you enjoy Coach Jim Donnan right now. Let me talk about the SEC East for a moment, because, Coach, what I believe is this is a division that's going to be better this season. Now, I don't know how many teams rank the top 10, top 15. I think Florida, Tennessee both still have their problems. But I look at a South Carolina team that's kind of getting better. I think a Kentucky team that certainly, boy, you want to talk about recruiting. I mean, Mark Stoops has done a good job of recruiting there. I think he's upgrading that roster. You know, in terms of being their sort of easy wins in the SEC East, I don't know that there will be as many of those in 2017 as maybe there has been in the past. How do you kind of handicap the race in the SEC East right now?
Well, one of the reasons people listen to Dog Nation is you know what you're talking about, Brandon. There's no question that the SEC East, from top to bottom, every team should be a little better. And Florida just got better by getting Zaire. I guarantee you that was a big push for them to get him, because any way you look at it, this guy's played in some big games and won some big games, and he brings a lot to the table to this Florida offense that's really struggled over the last couple of years, but still was able to win. And I think with all their backs back, we don't know what's going to happen with Callaway there at receiver with the situation with the marijuana deal. But I do feel like that helped Florida so much. Tennessee, even though they did lose Dobbs, I think their recruiting has really stepped up. You saw all the guys that got drafted last year. They got pretty good players on that team, and they did win 9 games. But Kentucky, if they can get their defense, Mark Stoops, the defensive guy, if they can get their defense where they don't have to outscore everybody, I think they got a really good shot. And Missouri and South Carolina have two premier quarterbacks. I think Drew Locke has got a chance to really be a pro player. He's a good basketball player, could have been a basketball player in college. And if he can get any protection there where he doesn't just have to do these RPOs all the time. And Vanderbilt, you know what they did at the end of the year with a big win. That Schumer kid had 2 games where he threw really well at the end of the year, and they beat Tennessee. So not to mention, I hate to say they beat us, but I just think that it's not going to be anything easy for any team. And then you add in these 2 non-conference games that we start out with who have 2 really good quarterbacks, Taylor Lamb at Appalachian and this Wimbush kid at Notre Dame, a dual threat guy. So we're going to have to, our defense is going to have to be primed and cocked, get ready to go against some really good quarterbacks, and not to mention the Fitzgerald guy sure. from Mississippi State.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And, you know, you mentioned Florida there. Here's the thing, and you can speak to this better than I can, but you know, when you lose so much talent in the NFL, and Florida just lost a bunch of it, lost its defensive coordinator too. I mean, isn't there a certain point when, you know, Coach McElwain had a couple struggles in recruiting in 2015 and 2016? Is it going to be kind of hard for him to replace those defensive backs, Anzalone, you know, Jared Davis? I mean, that's a lot for a one coach to replace, especially when you're working in a new defensive coordinator too, right? That's one of the reasons why I give the edge to Georgia over Florida in the East.
Well, one of the things you got to remember about Will Muschamp is he did recruit. I mean, they got a lot of good defensive players there, and he'll do the same thing in South Carolina. I mean, he does this like Kirby. They use a Nick Saban blueprint. They do a great job of evaluating players, and he was in a state where there's a premium amount of players, and they left them some really good guys. And, you know, there's no question their defense carried them the last couple of years. But I think they're going to continue to have a pretty good defense. Randy Shannon's a good defensive coordinator. He was a guy that I knew when I was recruiting him at Oklahoma when he went to Miami. He's a quality coach. But, you know, the bottom line, we're 1-5 against these 2 teams the last 3 years. Kirby's only been here a year. And these guys from Georgia's got to get over the hump and find a way to beat Florida and find a way to beat Tennessee, regardless of how the game's ended in the past. The future is what's out there. And I would take our squad right now on paper. It looks like it's got a really good shot of developing But at the same time, we got some issues that we got to overcome. Hopefully, our kicking game is going to get better, and our return game in particular should help our offense. If we can get better field position, then it's easier to score if you're not having to go the long haul every time. So get some big plays on offense and get a better kicking game, and that'll help you.
Let's talk about what might be the biggest offseason storyline for George, and that's how Jacob Eason develops in his sophomore season. First of all, as a guy that watched him closely during his freshman year, what did you see from Eason, and what do you expect from him in terms of his second year? How much growth should we anticipate seeing? How much better does Eason become? I mean, just your overall thoughts of kind of where Jacob Eason is as he gets ready to transition into a sophomore campaign.
Well, one of the things you give him credit for is he won the job. I mean, any way you look at it, you know, he was the guy that won the job over Lambert and you know, Bryce Ramsey, and he was able to have some really good effective quarterbacking throughout the year. The real paradox for us, I think, with Jacob is the fact that he's a lot more comfortable in the gun. That's where he's grown up. I mean, anybody would – that's not a real knock on him, but he's a lot more comfortable on the catching the ball and setting his feet and throwing out of the gun. But when you do that, and I think looking back to the spring game, everybody's worried about why didn't Georgia run the ball better in the spring game. Well, first of all, Michelle and Chubb didn't. But if you're on defense over there, those kids aren't worried about Eason carrying the ball off the zone read. I mean, they're not going to worry about that. So everybody in the stadium was tackling these backs. And it wasn't so much the backs not getting blocking. It was just the fact we weren't showing much. So I think therein lies the paradox, as I mentioned, is if you get into the gun, you limit some of your strengths running the ball, because Chubb and Michelle, as we mentioned, are power runners that run downhill and really more effective, I think, with a lead blocker. But Jacob is not real good at setting his feet on a drop back from under center. He's going to get better at that, and any young kid's going to mature getting your feet set. So I think that's where Chaney and the offense got to get a happy medium there, how much gun and how much play action we're going to do out of the under center. But accuracy-wise, as a guy that's coached quarterbacks for a long time, I think that's the hardest thing for any quarterback to develop. It, you're either accurate or you're not. He's got such a big arm that he's going to weigh a lot of times, you know, have some overthrows or have some drops because he throws the ball with a lot of velocity. So I just think his accuracy is not going to improve just because of who you are, but his footwork, his ability to read coverages, do all those things, and the players around him, the supporting cast, hopefully – Ridley will come through for us. You know, Hardman will come up there. We'll get Holloman in there. And then we got some guys like Wims and you know, Terry Godwin who potentially can help. You know, Brandon, if you got a receiver like Julio Jones, I mean, as good as Ryan is, it makes a lot of sense to throw the ball to Julio.
Sure.
And let him do something. What happens is everybody starts double covering him, and then that opens up the other guys. We got to get the ability to throw a couple things, to throw the ball when everybody in the stadium knows you're going to throw. That means your protection's got to be really better. You don't have the effect of run or pass. And we've got to be able to be more accurate in you know, catching and not only catching but throwing these balls. That let's just say, for example, you have a waist down here, second and two or second and three, and you decide to go over the top and you throw it and you don't hit it. Well, third and three now for us last year was not great. We were not a great team and making a lot of first downs. I think we can do that this year, so I think we're going to hit some big shots. So my basic appraisal is he's going to make some really good improvement. He's getting pushed by Fromm, and having Ramsey out there will be a guy that he can relate to and talk to about the game in practice and during the games. And, you know, hopefully the supporting cast is going to help him, and we'll see what happens. But he's got to understand, one of the things Socrates said a long time ago is know thyself. He's got to understand what he can do and what he can't do, and just continue to eliminate mistakes. And he was very good at not having many interceptions.
Very
taking care of the ball, and I hope that he'll continue to do that.
Very impressed with the Socrates quote, by the way. I had no idea you're going to break out the philosophers on us today.
Well, you got to give everything to catch up with you. When I'm on your show about once every year and a half, I got to give everything I got. But I do feel like Jacob had a monumental amount of pressure on him coming in here, and he handled it pretty well. But I also know that it's hard to make comparisons and all that. But the bottom line is I don't worry about interceptions near as much as maybe some coaches do, because I played quarterback, I coached quarterbacks for a long time. And if you're going to be a really good quarterback, you've got to throw the ball in some tight windows once in a while, because you're going to get good coverages. I mean, people are going to play in this league. They're smart. They know what to do. So you just can't count on having a one-on-one situation all the time where your risk-reward is very easy there. So, I think he's going to have to be able to throw the ball in some tight windows to get some more completion force, and hopefully he'll be able to do that. He starts out with a big arm that not many people have. But he's got to really work hard on his footwork, and I think getting Jay Johnson in here has been a big help. He can't do but so much on the field because he's one of these off the field guys. But he does give another set of eyes to Coach Chaney to talk about technique and all that. I was very impressed with this guy when he was at Southern Miss. I covered some games, watched him practice, coaching quarterbacks, and that's a big help to Coach Chaney too.
Couple quick minutes and we'll let you go, Coach. How impressed were you with Jake Fromm during the spring?
Well, I started out seeing Fromm last year when he was at camp here. I watched him and I thought he did a good job off the field with his way he handled the players on his team. I watched him over there talking to them. They're getting ready to play 7-on-7. So he's a very good leader, and I watched him on some tape during the year, and he's got that it factor from the standpoint of being a guy that can take charge. He's got a really good feel for knowing the offense. He's, one of those guys that really knows what to do. And I think more than likely with the situation now with Bryce here, he's going to get some more help from a standpoint of a guy that's been around. So I think the big thing with Jake is everybody wants to put some pressure on Eason. Just because it's good to have two guys like that. But I think he's got to continue to improve his arm strength. He's got good feet, and he really does a good job of anticipating where to go with the ball. So, he's got a really good shot of being a good quarterback here. And I think everybody talks about the one thing that I don't get to be on here. One thing I would say about quarterbacks, recruiting them over the years and having guys that were five-star guys and number one draft choices like Chad Pennington and Troy Aikman, and I'm not just dropping the names. If you're a good player and you really believe in yourself, you're not worried about the depth chart. These people, these recruiting gurus, get out there and say, hey, Georgia's got two five-star quarterbacks, or Georgia's, or Florida State doesn't have as many people, or Auburn doesn't have. Hey, let me tell you something. If you're a good quarterback and you believe in yourself and you want to go to a school, why would you not go there? I mean, you got a chance to play State University. And the one thing that I look for with all these guys that Kirby's bringing in here is the quarterback's going to look at who's he going to be throwing to, who's going to be protecting, who's going to be running the ball. And that's one of the – no matter how good you are, I mean, a guy can sign a major league contract and play third base for somebody that doesn't have anybody on the team. And, hey, that's great. But, hey, you want to win, you got to go with some guys that can help you out. So I would point out, and most people think I don't know what I'm talking about, but I can guarantee you one thing. When I've recruited good quarterbacks over here, the least thing that worried them was who was on your depth chart. Because if that guy's worried about not being able to play, then I probably really don't want him to come play for me because, he doesn't have a lot of confidence. If you don't have confidence in quarterback, you better go play another position.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Hey, a couple quick points before we let you go here. A lot of Auburn hype during the offseason. I may have even contributed to some of that. Are you buying into it? Do you think Jared Stidham makes Auburn a real live SEC contender this year?
Well, I said on the Feinbaum show back in December, the best recruit that anybody's going to have this year, Jared Stidham, because you looked at Auburn's ineffectiveness at quarterback, whether it was because of White's arm being down or whatever it might be. That's got to be the deal. When they've been good, when they've had Cam, when they've had Marshall, they've had a guy that can get the ball down the field and can move his feet and help in the run game too. And Stidham did that at Baylor. The one thing Baylor did, Brandon, compared to a lot of teams, most teams that run these RPOs, they just try to get get a play to avoid a bad play. You got to run, and they got eight men in the box, and you just throw a short pass. Bader throws it down the field now, and he gets a good job for them. And it worries me as a Georgia guy that he's over there, because I've seen firsthand what he can do, and I know what kind of backs they got. Petway, I mean, he's a human bulldozer over there. If their defense can play anywhere near like they did last year, that's just, you know, a team that, to me, has got the best shot of in the West of being at least competitive with Alabama, because LSU lost so many good players, and the rest of the teams are struggling a little bit as far as getting up to that next level, because, you know, you didn't have a lot of them winning that many games in the West. But I promise you this, Zaire and Stidham moving into the league, two teams that I really don't want us to be worried about as much as we need to. That makes you worry more, because these are two guys that know how to play that position.
Yeah.
And I think Auburn's defense is going to be a question. They got that kicker who's not fair. When they get across the 50-yard line, he can hit a field goal. So they're a good football team, and, you know, we'll just see what happens. But I think most of the Dog Nation need to just really put it in perspective. The way Kirby and Tucker shut down Auburn there after that first series last year was unbelievable. I mean, that was just incredible that offense couldn't make a first down against us. And that was a huge win for Kirby and for our confidence, I thought.
Hey, Coach Donald, we really appreciate your time on Dog Nation Daily. Really terrific insight of both in the SEC and the Georgia Bulldogs as well. We'll look forward to hopefully talking to you again very soon, and certainly look forward to watching all of this play on the field this fall. Thanks for your time today.
Okay, Brandon, glad to be with you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Time now for our SEC Through. Of course, make sure you check out SEC Country Live each and every Monday through Thursday on the SEC Country Facebook page. I'm on vacation. That show goes on. Hope you'll watch it and then see me back again live on Monday for another episode of SEC Country Live. Also, let me remind you, we're getting excited about September. Dog Nation Invasion 2 South Bend, brought to you in part by our friends at U.S. Auto Sales. You know, lots of car dealerships play games with sticker prices and hit you with hidden costs, but that's not true at U.S. Auto Sales. We pride ourselves on giving our customers no haggle pricing with no hidden fees. Find out more at usautosales.info. I said this yesterday, I'm really kind of using our SEC Through space this week for a lot of preview content, taking a look at some of the things I think could happen around the SEC in the upcoming season. As I kind of look at one of the big storylines kind of unfolding here this year, one of the things I can't help but notice is if you take a look at some of the biggest stars in the SEC, I think there's one thing that a lot of these guys have in common. It is not obvious where their help is going to come from. In a position group where maybe nobody else has the same kind of stature or maybe very little reason to believe that anyone's going to match that same kind of productivity, there are a lot of stars in the SEC who may not get a lot of help this year. Let me give you a few examples of what I'm talking about. How about Arden Key at LSU, the defensive end, the pass rusher? Even if we assume that Key comes back and has a great season, who helps him on that LSU defense right now? Now, you probably assume LSU's got plenty of talent on defense. And they do, but it's young. It's inexperienced. Really, nobody in the SEC has fewer starters. That includes on that defensive side of the ball. Key, even if he returns back to the same player he was in 2016, there's no guarantee that he's going to have the help that he needs to see that Tigers defense do what it needs to do for Ed Orgeron in his first season. And if that's true for Key defensively for LSU, I think that's also potentially true for Alabama wide receiver Calvin Ridley as well. We know that part of the problem with Alabama's wide receivers is Jalen Hurts has a hard time delivering the football. But in the case of Ridley, a guy whose statistics dropped off mightily in 2016, part of the problem for him may be there's just nobody else in that Alabama wide receiving core that plays the game the way he does. Now, on the off chance there's an Alabama fan listening right now, I know what he or she will say. They'll say, yeah, but how about those freshmen? Jerry Jeudy and Devontae Smith and Henry Ruggs, people like that. And yeah, you know, listen, that trio of freshmen that I just mentioned, they may come in, one of those guys may be just as good as Calvin Ridley was as a freshman a couple years ago. But that's not always the easiest thing to count on. What we have as a known right now is that Alabama is going to maybe potentially have a little bit of an issue finding a wide receiver that's as productive as Calvin Ridley was a year ago. I think that's also true for the Florida offense, where you look at Jordan Scarlett and the big talk that surrounded Scarlett all throughout the offseason. Maybe that's a 1,000-yard rusher for the Gators this year. Maybe he is, but modern football is all about having more than one capable and dependable running back. A tandem, at least, of running backs who can really get the job done. But who would Jordan Scarlett's partner in crime be right now? Is it junior college transfer Mark Thompson? Maybe so, but that's not a name that does a whole lot to inspire many Florida fans, I don't think. I hear from them on SEC Country Live every single day, and you don't hear them talking about Thompson very much. And there's a chance that Florida tries to build its offense a little bit around the running game, but the attempt at doing that may be upended somewhat by the fact that really there's no other running back like Scarlett, at least right now on paper, that seems to be able to carry the load the way we assume he might be able to. Another offensive name I'll give you is Juwan Jennings, the wide receiver at Tennessee. Now, Lord knows, Dog fans have bad memories of Jennings, who caught the Hail Mary against Georgia in Sanford Stadium last year. He may have a good season 2017, probably will. But who is Tennessee's other receiver? Do they have one yet? Is one of those guys going to step up and emerge? Breaking in a new quarterback at a time when you also are looking for a replacement at Josh Malone at wide receiver? It's a tough spot for Butch Jones to be in, and a completely overhauled offensive staff as well. That could be a real interesting storyline here in 2017. On defense, I think the same thing's probably true for Sky Moore, the linebacker at South Carolina. Gamecocks are glad to get him back after missing the season in 2016. This is a tackling machine. But who helps him in that South Carolina defense? Now, eventually, a guy like Jamias Williams, a part of the 2017 recruiting class, he'll make an impact for the Gamecocks. But not early in his freshman season, I would not imagine. And while a guy like Williams is kind of working himself into college shape, I think South Carolina may still struggle just a little bit on defense. This could be a surprise team for me, but Sky Moore may not have enough help on that side of the ball to see South Carolina truly achieve everything that's potentially, you know, out in front of it. With that, we'll make that your SEC through. Want to wrap up the show by reminding you that this is my vacation week. That means as you listen to the show right now, I am probably on the beach, lathered in sunscreen, and I know that's probably a difficult image to get out of your head, but nonetheless, that's what I'm doing right now. But do want to let you know, though, that even though I'm not here, we do have a great week of Dog Nation Daily. That means if you listen to us in podcast form or on the radio, we're still delivering shows each and every day and really bringing back some fun guests. Some really good stuff coming up from Jim Donnan this week. Our good friend Barrett Salee hasn't been with us for a while. He's going to be here. Benjamin Wolt, we'll still talk some recruiting on the show, get kind of a landscape for where things land on 2018. And, of course, we'll welcome back Ryan Fowler as well, who we have not had on Dog Nation Daily in quite some time. So that's all coming up this week. If you're hearing me now, later in the week, check out DogNation.com. You can hear all of those interviews in their entirety. And, of course, I look forward to being back with you again live on Monday. Big thank you for being with us each and every day. Thanks for listening to Dog Nation Daily.